welcome to Master Mayonnaise. I am Matt.
And I am Richard.
And I've had a cold all week, so I sound a little off.
I have no excuses for why I sound off.
I've gone through using two rolls of toilet paper as Kleenex on my third roll.
Nice.
Everyone loves to hear about that. Hopefully I won't have to stop in the middle and blow my nose. And yet, despite that, I haven't seen any new movies, and really the only new movie that came out this week was Speed Racer. I'm interested in seeing it, but
Red Belt came out. I saw that.
Oh, that's right, the David Mamet film. What did you think? This has Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce his name. God, he's a good actor.
Chiwetel.
He's like British, and I don't know. I think that's like a West Indian name or something. But anyway, it's David Mamet, and it takes place sort of the world of mixed martial arts, but basically it's about jiu-jitsu, and this guy runs a dojo and how he's sort of sucked into fighting in this one fight or whatever. And a lot of it's really good, although it's kind of weird. You know, Mamet's very first movie was this movie called House of Games, and it was filmed in Seattle, and it was basically a big con of a movie about con men. And
don't give away the ending. I still haven't seen that one.
Okay, I won't give it away, but it's about con people, and it's very elaborately constructed, and it's a really great movie. It's great for a lot of reasons. It has this very odd acting style that was very engaging at the time. It was almost this, you know, it was kind of weird, but a truly great movie, and it's kind of cool because it's filmed in Seattle and stuff. Anyway, because of how elaborately constructed and how it all tied together, honest to God, every movie I've ever seen that Mamet's done since is sort of, reviewers are sort of basing it, and myself, on that initial movie. You sort of look at his subsequent movies, and you see that a lot of them are about cons and people lying to people, and they're nowhere near as elaborately tied up in the end. It's just sort of stuff is happening, and this is case in point. This movie here, there's like a lot of cons going on, but they don't really, unlike House of Games, they don't like, you know, step you through it at the end and show you how this, what, at what point this person was actually screwing this person or whatever. So in the end, it just kind of seemed a little dumb because it's sort of like his cons grafted onto like the Rocky story about a guy that, or not Rocky, but, you know, the guy that doesn't want to fight, but in the end has to fight and of course, you know, how it's going to happen. And so a lot of it was dumb, but so much about it was great, such as that the lead actor whose name I cannot pronounce. He was really a great, fantastic actor. And as with a lot of David Mamet movies, he populates it with familiar names and faces like Ricky Jay and Joe Mantegna. And he also put a lot of recognizable people in that world in there, like, God, what's the name of the lead fight? I can't remember. One of the mixed martial art fighters that everybody'd recognize. He has Ray Boom Boom Mancini in there. Scotty Farrell.
I think you mean to say everybody who follows the sport, because have no idea what any of them are.
Yeah, but if you follow the sport, you'd recognize a lot of these people. And people like Ray Boom Boom Mancini, he was the world champion, I think, lightweight boxer from the 80s, very prominent boxer. And, you know, so he populates it with a lot of these people, and it was interesting. But you know, you kind of, when it's all done, you realize there's all these different little cons going on, but they don't really connect the dots the way it should have. And I don't like movies that overtly connect the dots, but I also don't like movies that just sort of leave a lot to be said. So, but it was okay. And it was, the fighting was filmed in an odd style that was pretty, you know, pretty effective. You know, it definitely looked real, like it was real jiu-jitsu. It didn't look totally over the top fake. So anyway, I liked it for the most part. I saw it on a Friday night at a movie theater at 8 o'clock with about 10 other people in the audience. Yeah. So it's continuing Mamet's tradition of not making a dime.
Yeah, it looks like Speed Racer's going to bomb.
Man, it's going to come in third. It's going to come in third to a movie's to Iron Man's second week. It's only going to make a third of what Iron Man made.
And I still, you know, it looks really interesting. And even my wife wants to see it because of the visuals. And she said it looks new and different and interesting. And even, you know, I haven't read a bunch of reviews, just Wells. And I started reading David Poland's positive review. And, you know, everybody seems to be saying, yes, it's visually interesting, but there's nothing else going on.
You know, I read Wells' review, too, and I saw he posted like the first 7 minutes online, and I watched that, and I confess I really enjoyed it. I thought it was unique and cool, and I love the style and Wells, but I exactly could see what Wells was saying in his review. He said, you know, about 30 minutes in, you're checking your watch. It's just unbelievably uninvolving and just crazy. And I basically, you know, I've heard them point out when they're making this movie, they said, you know, what was cool about this movie, the directors, the Wachowskis and Christina Ricci was saying, there isn't an ironic bone in this movie. It was done very straightforward, which you got to give them credit for. I mean, when was the last time, it's like a Saturday morning cartoon, one of those anime cartoons where there is no irony. It is just straight as it is. And I thought, well, mm-hmm. That's cool. And then the flip side of it, I started to realize, well, that's one of the things that gets you involved in movies is the fact that there's irony in a movie that's entirely earnest, yet basically ridiculous, might get pretty old after a while. Maybe that was it, but I definitely still want to see it, but there's just too many reviewers that I read that I trust that I think, damn, I think they're probably right. I think I might really start checking my watch pretty quickly in this movie, so I might wait for it for video.
There's also been, and I haven't read any of them, but apparently some early reviews that are negative on Indie.
Yeah. Yeah, they did a big New York Times article about it, and Movie City News, Dave Poland's site, is all over it for saying it's ridiculous that the Gray Lady, the paper of record, and they spelled record WRECKORD. They said the paper of record is taking two anonymous reviews about how there's supposedly problems and making a giant article about it. In other words, conflating two anonymous, you know, web reviews and conflating it in this giant, the paper of record. And I actually tend to agree with what they're saying there. What Wells was saying about it, which I suspect he's going to be right on the money, is that this is a movie that is going to be really exciting for people 35 and over. And under that, they just could care less. It's just that there's nothing in there that they're connecting to. They're not the Indiana Jones generation. They may have seen it on video, but they're not the rabid fans. And the filming style, he's using a filming style that he exactly used 25 years ago, which was so exciting, but is totally almost foreign. It would be like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and filming another version of that exactly like the original one. It just won't necessarily fly with today's audiences. That's what they're saying. I could totally see that happening. I definitely want to see it, but I can see that happening.
Yeah. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting. What else is going on? Iron Man's still doing well. They've announced the date for the sequel.
Yeah.
I find that so odious. Just from the perspective of, wouldn't it be nice if, I don't know, you had a script before doing that, or...
It would be, cut them some slack. Marvel is in a really challenging position right now, and...
It's not just them. I mean, lots of different movie companies would have done the same thing.
Well, I begrudge other movie companies. I don't begrudge Marvel. Marvel is trying to very, very quickly establish with investors that they have their act together, and there could not possibly be a better time to announce when your next Iron Man is coming out during the first week of the huge hit right now to confirm with investors that you have this slate of movies coming out and that they can invest with you. I mean, I really don't begrudge Marvel at all for that, although I agree with you, I begrudge everybody else. It kind of just tells you, wow, filmmaking has nothing to do with anything. You know, it's not, oh, well, we just can't get it together because we can't get a script. It's like, we don't care. A script will come together. We will make this movie. You know, that's, it's kind of weird. But I don't begrudge Marvel because they had to do that. They're in a very tenuous position.
I mean, I agree with you to a point, but on the other hand, it's not like a sequel was in doubt if it had done well. So to me, it was kind of just stating the obvious.
Yeah, but it's not that. It's not that it's a sequel. It's that they have they outlined a slate of movies for the next 4 years, and they said, here's when they are, here's what's going to go on, and that tells an investor, okay, I can see when and how their cash flow is working. I can see why, when they have that 1 year gap between movies, why that's happening, what's going on, and I'm not going to freak out. It's all about reassuring to investors. And investors are not, investors know a sequel's coming, but they want to know, is it 5 years in the works? A la, you know, I can't remember, like the Mission Impossible movies, or is it something they're going to be working on immediately and I can bank on? You know, I mean, Marvel is really out on a limb here in a way that movie studios never are. So I mean, I don't know. I personally don't begrudge them. I mean, they have to lock that those in, but I don't know.
You know, it's just irritating to have some of the, you know, I find the business aspects of movies fascinating, but there are times when having the two of those things intermingle is really irritating. And it's kind of like, you know, they say when you buy a car, you know, it's, you know, negotiate your final price first and then talk about how you're going to pay for it.
Yeah, oh, of course.
You know, it's like two
don't
separate
even
transactions.
Don't bring that up. Yeah, they love telling you about it. And they'll tell you how much can you afford per month. It's like, that has nothing to do with anything.
And so for me, it's like, why don't you get the creative side in line first and then say, okay, now we'll talk about the business. But that, you know, it's naive and that's not how it works. It's just kind of, like, it's just personally frustrating.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I look at, like I was watching, I think I told you last week, I watched Apocalypse Now again or a couple weeks ago, and watching the documentary and realized, geez, they started filming this movie in 1976, and it effectively was released late in 79. So they started filming this movie with no real idea when they're going to release it. And then it took them like a year and a half, 2 years almost, to film the movie. And then it took them like a year to edit it. And basically when they released it, they kind of still weren't done editing the movie. And they just sort of randomly did it. And the only reason they released it is because they thought, well, let's get it out at Cannes and we'll put a film, you know, we'll put something together for the Cannes Film Festival. And they finally said, well, you know, let's just lock it in here. Well, nowadays, boy, you know, my dad, my uncle and dad were looking at when we saw Iron Man yesterday and they were looking at the poster for 007 and they're going, wow, they got another one coming out already. I didn't, and then I was looking at it going, yeah, wow, I can see the date there, which is not too far off. And I know that they're not even done filming half of that movie yet. They clearly have locked it in knowing, okay, we're going to give this much time for editing, whether it takes that or not, whether it needs it that much time or not. It's just, it's kind of amazing how they can put these things together that way.
Yeah,
totally different than the way it used to be. Pardon?
It's a ton of pressure on the editor.
Sure does.
Although I think they were almost done filming when they had the car accidents.
Oh, were they?
At least.
Well, you know, it does, you're right, it puts pressure on the editor, but it also shows the editing has ceased to be, well, first of all, it's a mechanical issue. In the old days, it was all literally reels of, I mean, the only person that edits that way now is Steven Spielberg, where you're using actual reels of film. Now it's all done with digitally, so it's very easy to do it quickly. But it also says that, you know, putting together an edit for a movie becomes a pretty quick and easy process, and it sort of isn't necessarily anymore a real art form. It's just technical issues.
You know, then it becomes, you know, then you have a couple of issues going into it, such as, you know, you need to be logistically on the ball. And, you know, if you're making a professional film, you really should be at that point. You know, all your footage is, you know, if you need to find a certain shot, you know exactly where to go.
Yep.
And, like, you know, and you should be at that level anyway. You know, and you're right. And then it becomes an issue of you have so many options. to edit and to cut something, and you know the computer makes it really easy. And then you have, then it's more a question of knowing what you want and being able to say that, and then being able to finish and say, okay, I don't need to F with that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, because I remember the Star Wars Episode II DVD. Was it the second one? I think it was. And they were actually showing that George Lucas in the editing bay doing some computer editing on, I think it was even the first film, and showing him move stuff around and actually, you know, take a character from one take and cut him into another take. And I remember thinking, that's really extreme. I mean, it's good that he knows what he wants, but on the other hand, I don't think it matters.
Yeah.
You know, at least for that, the example they were showing was incredible. It's like the amount of work it took to pull this character out of this one scene, you know, and rotoscope him into another scene or another, you know, have it just so he could be like 2 inches to the left. It's, you know, that's true.
It's ironic that in this day and age that with certain people like Lucas, even though with all these new tools, they still make it just as hard as it was in the old days. In the making of stuff with Apocalypse Now, they were talking about the sound design, and that was a very famous watershed movie for sound design because it won an Academy Award, and it was incredible at the time when most movies were reproduced monaurally. So anyway, they were showing how they were putting together, and basically they had these guys at a sound studio, a mixing studio, but you had thousands of sound clips, and so they had these two guys in the back in this overheated room that had to be very far away from the actual sound bay so they wouldn't hear all the mechanical tape heads whirring, and their job was to quickly grab any tape that these guys would say. They'd kind of go on a microphone, okay, I need cut 3x3 of a helicopter whir, and these guys had to rush really quick, find it, put it on a tape head, loop it up, and hit play so they could kind of work it. So these two little, like, slaves in the back, their whole job was to grab snippets of tape from hundreds and hundreds of boxes and put it together. It was something like now you just line them up on your computer, but at the time it was an actual practical job to grab pieces of tape and do it in such a way that you couldn't actually pick up the sound from where they were doing the mixing. You know, it's unbelievable the amount of work, and it sounds like George Lucas is just, even though with all this new stuff, he's making the same amount of work, only now it's all just with digital work.
let's see what else is going on. I watched my borrowed copy of Your Hollywoodland last night.
Oh yeah, what'd you think of that?
Not quite what I expected, mainly in that that is a real slow burn movie. And, you know, I sort of get why, because they were going for a noirish period film.
And they're trying to examine all sides of this story kind of thing, and which was a weird thing for me to get into.
Well, what was funny was about halfway through, my wife suddenly laughs, like at a really inappropriate point in the movie. And she's like, I just got it. The Ben Affleck storyline isn't taking place at the same time as the Adrian Brody storyline. I think it's because she missed the sort of the establishing shot towards the beginning with Ben Affleck's body in the morgue and the camera pulls off and then you see him alive. I think she wasn't paying attention when that happened. And
that could be confusing if you don't recognize it.
Well, it's just so funny how you know, we approach watching TV and or movies in a different fashion. You know, it's like, if I'm watching a new movie, I'm pretty well focused on it and really trying to pay attention and, you know, or a TV show. And if, you know, the phone rings or, you know, she wants to talk, I'll pause it so I don't miss anything. But from her perspective, it doesn't matter. You know, she'll talk and she'll miss dialogue and it just doesn't matter to her. And that's how it is. But then when you miss stuff like that... To me, it's just like, oh my God, that's like a whole, one of the big conceits of the film is you're seeing this whole perspective thing, and she didn't pick up on that for the first half.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny to realize that your perceptions are different like that.
I know, but if I watched that movie, it was a little convoluted, and I didn't like actually the way they structured it and everything. But I like some of the performances. I like the feel. I definitely like Ben Affleck in that movie.
Oh, he was great.
But yeah, that would have been confusing to me.
Yeah, it definitely. I respect the fact they were going for this noir feel, which I think they achieved. But I found myself getting impatient with it, and that was. You know, I'm not sure if, you know, I should blame that on myself or my own, you know, I don't have sophisticated enough tastes to appreciate it.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think at all. You should never blame yourself. A lot of other people had the same reaction to that movie.
Let's see what else. Oh, and I drove over to your place yesterday to borrow Grand Theft Auto 4.
Yep.
I get back to my place. I pop it in, and not even through the first cutscene, the introductory cutscene, my wife kind of wanders downstairs and wants to spend time with me.
Oh, great.
So I turned off the Xbox. I finally got it in last night around 10:30 or so, and played about an hour. Basically my first date with Michelle. Which I thought was funny, because when you first got it, I emailed you and I said, so is this just the greatest thing ever? And I was very crude in my language, and you said, A, that's the most disgusting thing I've ever heard. B,
absolutely.
It's a great game, and I'm bowling with Michelle right now. And my first thought was, Michelle, the business manager from the Commons? Okay, are you emailing me on a PDA? I don't understand why you're telling me that. Now I understand it was an in-game thing you were referring to.
Absolutely.
But so far it hasn't been. It's all been very directed, and I don't know at what is there a point when it's not as directed, or is the whole game like this, and it's just up to you to not do something and wander off on your own.
Yes, yes, that's it. The second thing, it's the storyline. Is very directed, although there's a couple key points when you can do something else. And I think they don't really give you the option, but there's a couple points where it helps to, like when you're 20 hours into the game, make a couple different save points, because that you'll end up encountering some decisions to make. And if you want to play through again another couple hours, just the final couple hours with a different point, you can see some different stuff. But essentially, the storyline is pretty scripted. It's a series of, you go to a place, you get, it triggers a cutscene, and then you do something that relates to that storyline. And then during those storylines, you can do other things to help you. Like, you have to go out with Michelle to advance your mission. But there's other people you can date too, and there's other people you can hang out with, like, let's go play darts, let's go drink, let's go do whatever, and then that advances, it doesn't even advance achievements, but advances your overall progress in the 100% of the game, where, oh, I have a friend who likes me and respects me because we hung out and we did stuff. If you break dates, they lose your respect and other stuff. Well, so you can do that. You don't have to, but you can do that.
I guess I'm just, so far, I haven't seen a good point to go wander off. I guess when I was supposed to go clothes shopping, I guess.
You are so early into the game, in retrospect, you'll be, wow, I can't even believe I was contemplating that stuff, because you're so early into the game. You haven't even... A quarter of the world is only opened up to you right now, and there's just not much out there right now. But it'll come, and then there's things you can do, like, you know, especially once I think it's about 15 hours in is when you finally access all islands and everything. And then there's things like you can go around doing jumps. There's like 50 jumps in there that you can attempt. With different things. There's different assassination missions that you can have access to, where you have to go assassinate people. And then there's like pigeons. There's like 200 pigeons floating around through the game that if you find them and shoot them, you get points or whatever. It's kind of crazy. They call them flying rats. They don't call them pigeons. But anyway, it's, you know, you're really very, very early in the game. Right now, they're just kind of teaching you the world, getting used to the use of, oh, I have this phone. here's how I can call people up. Here's how I can call a car service. Here's how I can suggest a date. Oh, now I have the internet. That's how I can make a date using the internet. And, oh, I can look through the internet and read stuff that isn't even really part of the storyline, but it's sort of in there, you know. Right now you're in teaching mode.
Excuse me.
So
okay.
So it takes a long while. Now, that said, it was funny. I was listening to the Joystick podcast yesterday, and they all had my exact attitude towards the game, mostly, which is, yeah, it's great. I love it. I do not get the, this is literally Jesus has come down, and this supersedes Jesus as the second coming of Jesus kind of reviews. They're saying it's Grand Theft Auto. It's like what I would expect it to be now. It's very similar to the last one, just more, and there's some wonky camera issues, and there's this and that, and yeah, a lot is great. I just, that's where I'm at. I think it's a great game, but I, honest to God, don't think it's the, I mean, it just feels very evolutionary from the other games, and I don't, you know, I just don't get the reviews. It seems to me it was like a perfect storm of so much controversy, people waiting around, and then at a certain point, the mass media realized, you know, we can't do a, oh, it's the world's most violent game meme anymore. They realized there is, nobody buys that anymore. The whole Jack Thompson era is literally over. So they all moved on to this, this is the greatest game meme, and everybody stuck with it. You know, I mean, it's a great game, but it's sort of, you know, it does not, to me, in a sense, live up to everything everybody was saying about it. It's just a little crazy to what they were saying about it. And I did like the game a lot.
Well, but I will continue to update you on my progress. I also started, cool. Let's see, I finished.
Oh, did you, have you gotten any gamer points
at all?
Well,
I got the 5 off the boat ones.
I'm sitting here looking at that, and I'm looking again last night going, God dang, I got 135 gamer points for 35 hours of play, and I've played Project Gotham Racing, which is not an easy racing game, or not that easy, and I've played that, and I'm like at 250 after like 4 hours of play. It's maddening. To me, it's clear. And given how much, you know, I didn't realize this, but, you know, Microsoft, like, literally threw all of their marketing budget related to Grand Theft Auto into Europe. Come to find out, that's where they spent all their money. And the big thing they pointed out was the one thing that they had difference in their, they emphasized in their marketing was the achievements. And that's the thing. And seeing how unbelievably poorly implemented achievements are, I'm really surprised, because that was what Microsoft was actually, you know, marketing it itself for, you know. Anyway, it's just kind of,
well,
I'm just real frustrated with the whole achievements thing.
And I totally get where you're coming from, but, you know, until they release the sale, maybe if it worked, it worked. And we won't know until they release the sales figures.
It may have worked. They banked on achievement. What they're doing is they're saying, here is the reason, and it's really good. Now when you actually buy it, we didn't mean to tell you, but they actually really suck donkey balls. We know that this is the difference, but what we didn't tell you is it's not a good difference. No. It's a shitty difference, pardon my language. You know, it's bad. So I think it may have been successful.
I think you're, I disagree. I think it's all from your perspective and from the, you know, I would be frustrated too, but it could be from the, you know, if they're trying something new and they're saying, you know what, we've got this game it's the ultimate sandbox game. And so, I think they're trying to go for replayability and forcing you to do as many sandboxy things as possible. So they spread them out in this manner. Which is frustrating if you're not used to it, but, you know, they could have been trying an experiment saying, you know what, we're going to try it like this time, and we're going to see if it works, and maybe it'll be a failure. You know,
Okay, so let me ask you this. Okay, well, let's do this. Why make it so hard to figure out what your achievements are? Why do you have to sign off the game? Why is it a 3 to 5 minute procedure to actually see what your achievements are?
I don't understand what you mean when you
say, why can I go onto that game and find out how many hot dogs I've eaten in the game? How many miles?
think I lost you, dude.
Okay, I'm back recording. So why can I find out how many hot dogs and t-shirts I've worn, how many miles I've walked, all this other stuff, yet the most common thing for any gamer is, what achievements have I done? Why do I have to find a save point in the game, save the game, and that can take a couple minutes of itself to, like, get to a save place, save the game, log off of the game, log on to Xbox Live, see your things, log off to that, log back onto the game. I mean, that to me is ridiculous.
Well, except I don't understand. Don't you just press the guide button and, like, four clicks later you can see...
Press the what button?
The guide button on the Xbox controller.
Which is the guide button?
The one in the middle.
Yeah, well, to do that, you're basically... You're effectively logging off the game. You have to.
You press pause, and then you can do it, and you don't have to save and stop the game to do that, though.
Well, I don't know.
Xbox Live is set up so that you can look at that. Now, where you're absolutely right is that they're not showing you the progress apparently about hot dogs and that stuff, and that is frustrating. And
well, what I'm just saying is within the game where I'm typically looking at my progress. Like if you go to Project Gotham Racing, if you go to BioShock or whatever, you go to, within your game, you go and track down, you can see where your progress is, the stuff they want you to track vis-a-vis their game, and then also your achievements. It's all in the same boat. And this one here, it's not within the game. It's as if they made a decision. We want the experience to be absolutely identical between the PS3 and the Xbox. We want it to be the same. And I can see that, but it's like, but Microsoft gave you $50 million. Throw an extra menu item in there. Just throw a little extra menu item. How difficult could that be? I mean, that's what I'm frustrated. Okay, that's one thing. Number two is, there's nothing clever about them. I mean, I think back to the cute little logos they did in BioShock and virtually every other game. And you look at the achievement logos. I know this is a minor issue, but given the complexity and the beauty of this game, could they be any more poorly and mildly rendered? I mean, they're just lame. I'm just adding all this up and going, they don't care. They've made achievements so hard. And then, now when you're playing the game, I'm going to ask you, you're going to periodically have an achievement pop up and you're going to ask yourself each and every time, wow, why did that pop up now? That mission wasn't even, in fact, it was easier than the previous mission. Why was that the point that I earned this achievement? And why was it worth 10 points and this other one worth 30 points? You know, I'm sitting here playing other games and each and every time the missions become a little carrot to, oh, there's, you know, if I just work this a little bit harder, I can get this one. I can figure it out. In this one here, it's totally random. You have no idea when they're going to come up and you have no idea why. There's no point to putting any extra energy into them. You know, I mean, I could easily see having similar mission points, but doling them out in a better way and making it clearer why and what you're going to do to earn that points. I mean, it's just kind of lame, if you ask me. And I do understand the sandbox thing, but I still think you can dole them out better. You can, you know, traditionally the way points work is you get a few early on. Then you get a kind of steady heaping of them. Then it slows down a little bit. And then a certain amount are left for the real geeks who want to put a lot of energy into it. And those are hard but specific for your efforts. And they could have done the same thing here, but having 135 points for what 90% of the people are going to spend their time on just seems, I don't know, wrong. Don't mean to dwell on it, but it just seems kind of... crazy. And it will be interesting to ask you, I mean, how long is it going to take you to play 35 hours? It's going to take you several weeks probably, right?
It really depends.
Okay, well, let's say you're finished on that in 3 weeks and you've got your 135 points. It'll be interesting to ask you how that felt. If you felt that those, you know, they were given to you at points that seemed, wow, this is like an appropriate point for that mission or for those points, or if it just seemed random. You know, I mean, the reason I'm dwelling on this is because it just seems to me, if there was, if Rockstar did not have any special deal with Microsoft, I would say, well, whatever, who cares? That Rockstar can do what they want. They are actually bigger than Microsoft in this point. But the fact that Microsoft paid them a bunch of money, and this is the one thing Microsoft is using to differentiate themselves, you'd think they would have gotten a little more bang for the buck. Even if you disagree, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I definitely disagree because, you know, the money encompasses downloadable content, and that's it.
Well, first of all, what specifically, have you seen the agreement between them? Because that's what everybody says, but I've never actually seen that. And what I'm saying is this. I'm saying that it may encompass downloadable content, but my understanding was, and so this may be Microsoft's fault. I wouldn't begrudge you this, but my understanding was during the lead up to the release in Europe, the only thing Microsoft promoted, they did not talk about forthcoming downloadable content. What they talked about was we're the unit that has achievements. So that's why you should buy us, meaning buy our console and our game, not, you know, in other words, they're trying to get people to buy consoles. They're saying buy our console and our game because we have achievements. And so in other words, Microsoft promoted this. And so maybe it's Microsoft's fault if the agreement doesn't specify it. But were I Microsoft, I would have said, we want to work with you on achievements. So we're equally comfortable on this. We don't want to screw things up. So maybe it's Microsoft's fault.
Well,
anyway.
Except, well, you're changing your reasoning because you're saying the fact that they did this $50 million obligates Rockstar to be to do achievements in a way more Huffman friendly.
No, I don't know what the agreement was. I'm just saying that if that wasn't part of the agreement, then I would blame Microsoft to tell you the truth for not forcing the issue. Because that's kind of lame to focus on downloadable content solely when there is this other very important aspect, you know. Well, so I am changing it if it wasn't part of the agreement. But I would be stunned if it wasn't because they know on launch day that's the only differentiation they have. Why wouldn't they have made that part of it? But maybe, you know, Microsoft has always impressed me with their lack of a clue. So this would be more of the case if that's the case.
Well, I don't. It all comes back to it comes down to the fact that you personally hate the way the achievements are set up.
This is true, and I do it based on the fact that that I like achievements and it does not dole them out in any way that I'm used to, and I hate that, and I don't think that necessarily makes that I'm alone.
That doesn't mean that everyone else will hate them.
I'm not saying everyone else will hate them.
Yeah,
at
you
all.
Are. You're being very objective instead of subjective.
You get it backwards. I'm being very subjective and not objective. No, I don't disagree. If somebody else, maybe other people could care less. The whole game is out there. But I, you know, I'm just saying my opinion is based on having 15 games under my belt, and this implementation is poor. I thought Saints Row was poor, but at least with Saints Row, which is a GTA ripoff, after putting in 25 hours, I had 350 points, which is not quite the 800 and some of BioShock and other stuff. And I totally understand why, but it was still at least a little bit better. I mean, if you just ask yourself, Matt, I understand it's an enormous game and a bunch of other stuff, but you knew nothing about it. But you're saying, okay, you're going to get a game that has a main storyline that's going to take you 35 to 40 hours. And if you're like most people, you're going to spend 5 hours doing sandboxy stuff later. Most people, if you're like them. How many of the gamer points out of 1,000 do you think should take that 35 to 40 hours? In other words, 85% of your time, how many of the gamer points do you think should be accorded to that? What are your thoughts on that?
I have no idea.
Well, I'm not saying an idea. You've played many games before, so what would your expectation be?
But I haven't played the sandboxy games before.
But I'm just saying, I'm just talking about a time frame. You don't even know what the game is. You just know there's a time commitment to the game, and most people are going to spend 35 to 40 hours on this thing, and there might be some fun additional stuff, whether it's sandbox, whether it's a racing game, whatever. Would you expect that 15% of your points would be doled out for 85% of your time commitment? And you're going to say, no, it doesn't matter to me, I don't know, because you don't want to agree with me. But that's what I'm saying, is it just seems, if it was just a little bit different, it would probably not seem so annoying.
But. Okay, well, have you, in listening to the podcast or surfing the sites, have you detected the same level of frustration anywhere
else? I haven't
else?
Detected any frustration whatsoever. I'm clearly alone on it.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see if that does pop up as more and more people complete it. Because, I'm not insensitive to what you're saying at all. I take it from the perspective of maybe they were trying something different. And from your perspective, it has definitively failed.
Absolutely.
And I'm curious to see if others who are, more like yourself, who have played these types of games and have a certain level of expectation, what their experiences are. For me, achievements are fun, but I've already had so much frustration attempting and failing to get them that it really overcomes and sucks out any enjoyment I have playing the game.
That's true. Achievements in of themselves are a maddening thing that is a double-edged sword of you love them and hate them. It's an incredible thing. It's definitely a big selling point of the Xbox, but it's also a thing that you just get, why am I even trying for this stupid thing here? Because I've enjoyed the game, and now I'm trying this triple jump for the third time that I hate and I don't want to do, but
right.
I'm going to get an achievement.
Well, then it becomes, it's opportunity cost, and it's what am I, as I'm trying to get this, what am I not doing because it's taking all this time?
Yeah.
And more and more in my life, that's the defining factor. If I'm legitimately bored on a Saturday or sick at home one day and I just don't feel like doing anything else and I can spend 4 or 5 hours, chasing that, that's different. But, if it's a busy day and I've got, The Daily Show to watch and I've got Lost to watch and, Deadliest Catch in high definition, and emails I have to write, and I've got, 2 hours to do 4 hours of stuff in, and maybe at the end I squeeze in 30 minutes of gaming. If I spend all that time chasing after an achievement and then fail because, I'm not that good, then it's just frustrating.
Yeah.
Whereas if I reset my expectation and say, my goal is to just finish the level. And if I miss because I didn't get a headshot or something, and I miss the achievement, well, that sucks because I do want it, but I can't spend an hour doing it because if I did, it would take forever, and I wouldn't be able to advance. And then 4 more new games are going to come out that I'm not going to be able to play because I'm focusing on trying to get these stupid things.
Speaking of Deadliest Catch. Is it just me or obviously these guys are from Seattle and everything. So in the past couple weeks, I have seen them booked up at more little signings and appearances in Seattle. You would think that the promotion, the company, it's obviously like them locally doing it, but you'd think the promotion would like send them across the country. But there have been more places I've wandered into where I've seen a sign that says, oh, they're going to be here speaking or signing autographs or doing something here and there. You'd think it seems kind of weird. They must have a real loyal following in Seattle, but you'd think that it would be they'd take it across the country.
Well,
it's kind of weird.
Not all of the boats are based in Seattle. The Northwestern is.
It's all the Northwestern crew. I've never seen the show. I have no interest in seeing the show, but I know about them just because they're in Seattle and that's when they've been promoting. I knew too many doofuses that worked in that industry that I don't want to see a show basically making them all, not heroes, but making them the center of a storyline because I hate these doofuses. I've always hated them. I remember in high school having a couple, not friends, but doofuses coming back with $17,000 I made in 6 weeks this summer and then literally blowing it in like 3 weeks. Those people drive me nuts. I don't want to see a show all about them.
The Northwestern is in Seattle. In fact, the captain of the Northwestern rose the flag at the Seahawks game last year.
Yeah.
I thought was hysterical.
He rode the what?
The 12th man flag that they raise before every game.
Oh, okay.
They have like a local, you know, celebrities do it and sports people like Paul Allen's done it, but of course he owns the team. And anyway, two of the other guys, the two brothers, the Hildebrand brothers, wrote a book and are doing a promotional tour. I don't know who else is doing that sort of thing, but like at least one of the boats is labeled on the back as Juno, another one is Kodiak. I think at least one of the others is Seattle, so I think there's at least two Seattle boats that are on the show.
I think I lost you. I'm going to hang up and recall you back.
Oh, okay. Hey, dude.
Never understood why we're so close and we have the worst Skype connections ever.
It's been doing fine lately. It hasn't had the backup.
Well, it was awful on my end.
Oh, it's perfect on my end.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that sort of winds up. I don't think there's anything more to be said about the achievements this week.
So have you heard about this supposed rumor from this guy at Comcast that Comcast is set to announce that they're going to have a program of for their broadband customers, you'll be able to download, have X number of gigabytes a month download, and then once you reach that plateau, they're going to start charging you X dollars for every gigabyte you go over in a given month.
Yes, and I think the number bandied about is 250 is the cap.
Which, ironically, is actually pretty good. I will admit to, I'm so totally ambivalent about this. I just think it's all a ripoff, and ultimately it's all going to come down to everybody ripping off. Now, the flip side of that is that's actually a lot of bandwidth, and why shouldn't they, in a sense, be able to say, listen, there's got to be limits, because if there's an enormous amount, the simple fact is in your neighborhood, if you're sucking down all the bandwidth, it slows down everybody, and why couldn't they be? But me being an ultimate power user, I mean, I'm just sitting there thinking, God, I leave Slingbox on, sometimes 7 hours a day. That thing's pumping out a constant stream of data. And I'm just wondering, I wonder where I'm at with this. Because, with other games and other stuff, it doesn't matter that much. But for me, who's definitely having constant streams of data coming to my computer, I'm going, God, I'm the one who's going to get screwed by this. I don't know. I'm ambivalent. I worry about this because I'm definitely one of those power users.
I don't know. I can see their business case for it. But on the other hand, I feel like, I pay you a flat rate, you give me unlimited access.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. In fact, if you have to a certain extent, they should. If you're paying if you're paying one of the premium ones, they shouldn't have an issue. It should be it's unlimited. Now these other ones, if you want to pay less, if you want to pay $39, we'll do this. But but other than that, it should be unlimited. That's what I would agree with. It'd be interesting to see where Verizon comes down with this, because I'm definitely going, it should be in a matter of a month or so, I should be moving over to the Verizon setup, and it'd be interesting to see where they go with Fios, because part of their point is that you can buy, I'll probably be getting 30 gigabit download or 30 megabit download and 15 upload. Well, the whole point to that is that they can deliver a ton of data to you at a time. Well, you could use up that bandwidth in 6 hours if you'd assume that they would allow, much, much greater rates. But I don't know. It's kind of weird. And and I agree with you. I just want to pay the amount, but I'm not unsympathetic to their argument that if people are just leaving, if you had 10 people in my neighborhood leaving Slingbox running at high definition all day, that's going to slow everybody down if they're not watching it, which is me basically. So I don't know. I'm kind of ambivalent about the whole thing. I definitely don't want, I feel like I'm paying a lot for this already, but I don't know. It's kind of scary.
Do you see that, Gore Verbinski is set to direct the BioShock movie?
No.
Yes.
No. I didn't know there was. I mean, it, of all the games that seems like, wow, okay, I guess this could make a movie, this would be it. Although I wonder if Bioshock, the movie, I wonder what the storyline would be, because it seemed to me the storyline of the game, while very, very interesting, for a movie, the storyline would be what happened 3 years earlier or the year earlier as they're building and developing this underworld, and then everything goes to crap, not the guy that's finding the detritus later. But
Detritus, sorry.
The and Gore Verbinski is a very talented director who's done a couple really lame movies, these pirates movies, but he's a very talented director. It'd be interesting to see him tackle something like this.
Well, and I'll see it, but to a degree, it's funny because I feel like the game was a very cinematic experience. So to me, it's like I've seen the movie already.
Yeah. Well, isn't the sequel to Bioshock them developing a
yep.
prequel? And it's basically what I'm describing, only it's like the development of Rapture or whatever.
That has not been confirmed. That has been the speculation.
Well, you would hope they would do that, because, boy, if they go, oh, let's go revisit Rapture, it's like, come on. You know, your story was so complete. That really isn't in the cards for the way they've designed this and with the endings of the game. All I know is let's hope if they do a sequel that the final boss battle isn't as lame as the one in Bioshock. It was the single flaw of that game, running around hitting that idiot with syringes.
Oh, I didn't think it was that bad.
It was easy. It was so easy. It was almost impossible not to do it.
It was
pretty easy. I mean, boss battle, that's like minion battle. That was part of the problem, was it was kind of lame, but mostly easy. But, you know, whatever.
Oh, goodness. All right, well, I think maybe we should wrap up.
Sure.
I don't think there's anything coming out next week, but then there's Indy for Memorial Day.
Yep.
And then a lot of stuff. You know what's really interesting? I found myself thinking,
when is Batman coming out?
I don't know. I think it's June.
Okay. So that's pretty soon.
I found myself thinking, you know, I keep having such mixed experiences in the theater and thinking, you know what? I could have waited for this, or I didn't need to come into the theater to see this. And, you know, Iron Man was definitely an enjoyable experience. And I was feeling that urge, like, I gotta go, and I wasn't able to see it till Sunday. And I remember thinking, like, oh, what if I try to see it Saturday, but, oh, it'll be Saturday night, and, oh, my God, trying to see Iron Man Saturday night opening weekend will be nightmarish. And I felt
It's funny, though, with the amount of prints they're pumping out, even nowadays, it's rare I walk into a theater it's full, even with an unbelievably popular movie, because they just seem to throw it on more screens.
Yeah, I mean, there's that, but...
Well, I'll tell you, when that new, the new $40 theater opens in Redmond, one of these days you and I will have to dig in our piggy banks and just go check it out and see if the experience is worth it. And try it. You know, the one that they're opening there in Redmond. Although I haven't gotten a straight answer on how much it's going to be. I'll treat you. If I have actual money, if I have an actual job, I'll take you to it and we'll see if it's actually worth the investment for it. Because I would tend to say if you're making a certain amount of money, absolutely. You don't, those questions about is the experience going to be enjoyable will never be a problem.
Well, not even that. It's just... I just find it interesting the mentality I have, and it's entirely internal of thinking of having that urge like, oh my God, I have to see this.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really strong. Like with Iron Man, it was really strong, but with Speed Racer, I don't have that. Oh my God, I have to see this. And part of it's because, you know, if the buzz comes out being much more negative than you were expecting, and it's like, oh, okay, so your excitement level dwindles. I don't know. It's just, it'll be interesting to see, you know, if that remains.
It comes and goes with me. I read this review this week. I was just flipping through Washington Post, and this guy was going, this great reviewer, and he's going on and on about how great what happens in Vegas is and how Ashton Kutcher is going to be a major star, and he knows that's hard to believe. And it's not the greatest movie on the planet, but And it's surprisingly effective and smart, and I'm thinking, wow, I'm going to go see this movie this weekend. This sounds great. And then I flip over to Rotten Tomatoes and see it's got, like, you know, 80% negative reviews, and I realize, oh, crap. I did it again. I found one idiot reviewer who latched onto a movie and convinced me it was great and then realized, oh, it probably does suck. But I was like starting to look in my little change drawer to see if I had like $8 to be able to make it to this movie. And thank God I read the other reviews. But I generally would just rather sit at home, watch them on TV. But if something comes out and they're exciting, I want to see it. Definitely will want to see Indy in the theater opening weekend. Definitely want to see Batman. And I wanted to see Iron Man, but it just sort of wasn't in the cards. But I did get to see it a week later.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and wrap up. I've got some things I need to take care of before I go off to the Emerald City Comic Convention.
That sounds like fun.
We'll see.
Is there anything cool going on there? Do they have any, like, movie things or anything?
I don't think it's like a
mini Comic-Con?
Yeah.
Is it run by the same people, or is it just the... Okay.
No, it's small, because Seattle's a fairly small market, but it's progressively bigger each year, but there's no reason for you to show up.
Yeah.
You would be bored.
So there's no, like, movie things. It's really comic-oriented.
Yeah, I think they're ramping up. They have a few random stars show up to sign autographs, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have much interest, but I definitely am interested in that San Diego one. Although that New York one they had last week seemed kind of cool.
Yeah, I didn't.
Oh, and by the way, did you see my email about that? How did I miss that the Kids in the Hall were playing in Seattle this week?
I saw that. I did not know about it, and I don't know.
Yeah, that was weird. I'd heard, like, I saw this video a couple weeks ago that they had done some new video, and it's, like, really funny. I was like, oh, my God. And then they're playing Seattle. It's like, how did I miss that, and why am I so freaking broke, and... So, anyway, I had no idea. I guess their careers aren't going so well, so they're trying to relive that, which is cool. Because apparently it's new stuff, it's not old stuff, which is cool. But anyway, okay, we're just rambling. You got a comic convention to go to.
You guys rock at mustardamaze.com. Say reach us. My name is Matt. Mm-hmm.
I am Ricardo Montalban.
And thank you for listening.